Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. This is the Senate's Committee on the Economy. I'm Senator Mia Costello. I'd like to welcome Senator Gardner, Senator Meyer, Senator Machicki, and Senator Stevens. Thank you for being here today. I'd also like to thank the Recording Secretary Kerry and the LIO Operator Ben for your help today. Also in the audience, we have Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Begich, and Representative Rauscher. Thank you for making time to be here today. So today is January 18th, 2018, and it is 1:33 in the afternoon. This is the second hearing of the committee since session started on Tuesday. And on Tuesday, we had six panelists who talked to us about the economy and answering the question, how can we create more jobs? And today, we have Commissioner Designee Mike Navarre, welcome, and Division Director Brittany Cioni-Haywood. Thank you for being here. She's the Division Director for Economic Development. They are going to present the department's Northern Opportunity Strategy, the economic strategy for the state, and talk to us about how that was developed. And the question that we are looking at today is, how can we boost Alaska's economy? Following the presentation from the department, we will have a panel of individuals here today. Curtis Thayer from the Alaska Chamber is going to be here. Kara Moriarty with the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. Jillian Simpson and Julie Jessen from the Alaska Travel Industry Association. And also John Springsteen with the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority to talk to us further about commentary on your presentation and also just a conversation with committee members. So with that, welcome. Before we get started, I want to say we are the committee with a Facebook page, and if you're not following us, please feel free to and share it with people who are interested in talking about Alaska's economy and how we can strengthen it. So welcome, Commissioner, and please feel free to introduce yourself and your division director.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Mike Navarre, the Commissioner Designee for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development.
And if you don't mind putting your microphone closer. Thank you.
Thank you. This is the first presentation that I've made to a committee of the legislature as in my new official capacity. And with me is Brittany Cioni-Haywood, who is the director of the Division of Economic Development, who knows far more about the presentation we're going to do today, and she'll be presenting a little bit later.
Great. Thank you. And she's not unfamiliar to the committee, so welcome, Brittany, and we're glad to have you.
Thank you so much.
So for those watching, we do not have the PowerPoint up right now, but we do have hard copies in the hall, and so if you wanted to go ahead and start, and then as soon as we get that, we can place that up.
Okay. Madam Chair, if I could, I'm just going to do a very brief overview because this process was started and completed before I was appointed as Commissioner of the Department. So Brittany is a lead in the department who had oversight over it. It's the first time a comprehensive economic development strategy has been produced for Alaska. It was done in conjunction with communities around the state and a steering group or group that worked on it that is a broad cross-section of Alaskan business community, Native organization leaders that put together what is really a very good outline. And since then, what we've kind of focused on a little bit is kind of narrowing the priorities in order to find a few that we could focus on initially as we start through this process. There are incredible opportunities, as all of you know, in Alaska for economic development, in part because of our great natural resources, in part because of where we're located on the globe geographically. And we need to position ourselves to make sure that we stand the best chance of taking advantage of those opportunities as they are presented. And so one of the things, though, that I offer as a caveat and am working on putting together an economic message, because we also have to recognize that a strong economic foundation in Alaska will allow for that to take place. There are costs associated with economic development, government costs that are associated with it that we have to make sure that we have the ability to pay. So in all of our efforts to promote and look at economic opportunities and economic development, I want to make sure that we also build into that an expectation that we have to have some way of recovering revenues to pay the cost of those services that accrue to state government during that time. And with that, I am going to turn it over to Brittany, and she will go through the presentation that she was the lead in the department in developing.
Great. Thank you. And we'll take just a brief at ease while we get the PowerPoint up. Thank you, Commissioner. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. And again, as we mentioned earlier, Division Director Brittany Sony Haywood will be presenting on behalf of the department.
Thank you so much for having me. For the record, my name is Brittany Choney Haywood. I'm the Director for the Division of Economic Development in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. So today we're going to take a little overview of the first statewide SEDS that we've called Northern Opportunity, Alaska's Economic Strategy. This has been in the works for probably creeping up on 2 years, kind of from start to finish. We have wrapped up and have a final document now, so that's exciting, and we're moving into implementation, and we'll look at that in more detail here. So kind of just an overview of what we're going to look at. I do want to take a moment and really thank all of our partners. This was absolutely positively a collaborative effort, and we could not have done it without our partners across the state, including our ARTRs, other economic development organizations, the Federal Economic Development Administration, and the Center for Economic Development at the University. So what is a comprehensive economic development strategy? This is really a roadmap or a blueprint that can be used to do economic development. They're often done at local and regional levels and are becoming more and more common in the economic development world at the statewide level as well. So through this process, it really allows you to engage community leaders, leverage the involvement of the private sector, and provide that blueprint for regional collaboration among partners. It also provides capacity building foundation by which the public sector, in conjunction with working with different economic actors, individuals, firms, nonprofits, industry groups, can create an environment for economic development and prosperity. And so this is really the result of regionally owned planning processes that's been designed and tested through the means as a way to guide economic prosperity as well as resiliency. So almost every region of the state, there are some, at least areas that have some sort of regional development entity, and a lot that have local ones, has some sort of economic strategy. It's really built, this process was built using those strategies as the foundation and other past efforts that have occurred. And so the project also, as I mentioned, has been done according to the Federal Economic Development Administration's requirements and guidelines. This is a process that they have built and tested as well through other states and regions. So this is kind of a lovely diagram, kind of showing what goes into the formation of a SEDS. There was a background or research piece where we assessed those conditions. We also conducted numerous forums with community and industry. We had two surveys that we conducted, and then it was all overseen by a strategy committee that was made up of mainly private sector partners and leaders throughout the state. So these are the communities that we connected and had some sort of forum held. We did try to make it across the state. Obviously, we are a large state, and so We would have liked to have been to more, but we were somewhat constrained both by time and other resources as well. But the purpose of these forums is really to facilitate that conversation. We want to highlight and find out about those challenges and those opportunities within the different regions of our state and get stakeholders buy-in on this project, because that is really key for ACED's implementation and success. And what those priorities are going to be that are important to a specific region, but that also might cross across the state as we try and find similarities as well. We also engaged with industry and other businesses. So here are the business forums that we conducted, as well as we had two surveys. So in addition to contacting kind of the industry groups, we wanted to look at and have input from individual businesses as well. We had two surveys. One was to the general public to get their input. Again, this is all built on buy-in and people being able to have input into the process, as well as businesses. So the business survey, this is who we heard from. And this is just kind of one slide. But these questions, we asked about background, we asked about strategies, business confidence, what significant barriers they're facing, what opportunities they see as well, both for their businesses and for the state.
Brittany, is the survey itself and this information accessible online through the department's website? And then are the participants also listed, or is that something that you're keeping confidential?
The survey results are on the northernopportunity.com website, as well as the report. The individual responses, though, I believe were tabulated through SurveyMonkey, and we'd have to there wasn't names attached unless they wanted to receive the updates.
Thank you. Senator Machicki, followed by Senator Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious how the surveys were distributed. How do you know that you there was a cross-sectional opportunity for Alaskans, both business and individual?
Of course, Senator Machicki, through the chair. The surveys, again, was conducted. We used the SurveyMonkey tool, which the division has used for other projects. Then through Facebook posts and sending out newsletters through the chamber for businesses, other, kind of any way we could try and get it out there through social media in order to try and get impact with their. I know that the development manager and I at times did some radio shows. We discussed it on a news broadcast. So we tried to get it out there and get as much feedback as we possibly could.
Senator Gardner.
Hi. Hi. Thank you. I have two questions. One is, and you may have said this and maybe I just missed it, but it occurs to me to ask, when was the dates that these were done? And then the bigger question is, I'm sort of interested in changes over time. Have we done similar surveys in the past, and do we anticipate doing them in the future to sort of measure changes?
Great questions. Senator Gardner, through the chair. To my knowledge, we have not done surveys like this in the past. However, this is a living, breathing document that requires annual updates, and so that is a potential that we would look at using to update and get feedback on as we move into completing those. There will also be a complete revision at 5 years of the document. And I'm sorry, the first question?
The date.
Oh. The date, of course. So the surveys, for the business survey, we ran mid-January to mid-April of last year. The individual survey ran October 2016 through mid-January 2017.
Thank you.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you tell us, it's the largest group here answering on both who you heard from, business and individual, is the South Central. Can you tell us on the map that you heard from, what does that South Central area include? Is that everything in white? Does it include Matsu?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, I believe it would have it was not just Anchorage. It likely included all of kind of a regional definition of South Central, so the Valley as well. One of the things that we do note is that the population pretty much matches the population centers throughout the state. So we would have expected higher responses out of South Central because of the larger population. I can get a more defined answer on how we lumped those regions together, however, for you. If you
definition like. Often changes of South Central.
Right.
Does it include the Kenai Peninsula, do you think?
Yes. I would say almost certainly.
I would guess that it does. Again, I can have a more precise answer if you would like presented.
Thank you, and we can share that with committee members once we get that from you.
Okay. So in looking at the individual survey, these questions were slightly different. We really wanted to get people's thoughts in their own words. So most of the questions were very open-ended. They were kind of reasons for being Alaska, for living here, what would make Alaska better to live in, what they saw as opportunities, what a prosperous Alaska looks like, and concerns that they had about the economy. And I will also say that between the two surveys, we had about 800 responses for these. So in this process, taking all of this information, you know, we had the surveys, the forums, different input from the steering committee as well. We shook out six main goal areas: business development, finance and investment, economic development, infrastructure are some of the top three. And then we're going to look at some more of these in a bit more detail, but from that, we also constructed action items within these six goal areas, as well as different objectives. So here's the other three of the six: entrepreneurship and innovation, economic development, capacity building, and quality of life. So really, to kind of get to the meat of this presentation, I want to look at the priorities. So we have the six goals. We have 28 objectives under those six goals. Within those, almost all of them have multiple action items underneath the objectives. So there's a lot contained within this report. In order to make this manageable, we decided that we needed to set some priorities for the first year. Again, this is a five-year process. And so we have now chosen 10 priorities in which to focus on over this next year's time frame. I do want to note that these are in no particular order. The first one is not number one, or the second one number two. They are just the 10 that were chosen out of the 28. In order to make these, choose these, we did go back to the steering committee and asking for their input, as well as analyzing kind of the resources that we have within the department and the division, and some of the things that were kind of already underway in order to kind of gain some momentum. I'd really like to see some momentum get under this project as we move into this first year.
Brittany, could you explain to the committee the structure? So you're talking about a steering committee. Who do you know who was on that committee? Could you share that information with the committee?
Sure. Do you just want that shared after this, or did you want the list?
I mean,
now?
If it's a short list, I think
it's not.
Oh, it's not. Okay. Is it 100 people? 50?
No. Okay. I think we had probably. Some had to kind of drop off and come and go, but it looks like we probably had somewhere in the realm of 30 to 40 over the length of the project that we went to. So it is in the document, the one that's online, but I'd be happy to send the list over as well if you would like.
Thank you, and we'll share that. So the the creation of the priorities and the goals, is that something that the steering committee was a part of, or was that an internal department effort?
Chair Costello, yes. The steering committee met about once a month during the formation when we were constructing the communities and the industry forums. They had input into some of the feedback that we were receiving. They got to present ideas and areas that they had concerns about. Again, there were a lot of kind of industry and private sector people were the main components of this. We have actually several steering committee members I know that are on the panel next were a part of the process.
Commissioner Navarre.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You'll also see that the priorities are fairly broad in nature, open to interpretation, and it's one of the reasons why internally we focused on narrowing down the priorities. So that, and there may be a further narrowing because we wanted to focus on what might be achievable objectives that we could then focus on where those obstacles or opportunities might be and then present those in a more focused approach towards meeting the objectives of the SIDS.
Thank you.
I'll also say I'm kind of jumping ahead of here a little bit, Senator Costello. The there will be working groups that are formed as we move into implementation where we're going to bring together different partners to, again, continue that feedback and have that input and buy-in from those sectors that we really need to partner with to do this process. I'm a small division. I have 5 staff in economic development, so there's no way that we can undertake this really within our own resources. But we do have partners across the state that have interest in already working on some of this and have the expertise and the knowledge to help move this plan forward.
Thank you. Senator Machicki.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I noticed on the strengthen existing resource extraction industries, I didn't notice the word timber in this list, and I also didn't notice the word, as we identified the other day, we export almost everything in its raw form. I know these are high level, but did value added, was that a consideration, or do you think that's the next level down of consideration?
Certainly, Senator Machicki, through the chair. There is value added is a consideration within one of the action items on I think probably a couple of these, and timber is included in the resource extraction, and or it may have its own separate objective. I would have to go back and check, but timber absolutely is in this. When I presented to the Juneau Chamber, it was one of the objectives that I highlighted.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So after yesterday's presentations, I had an email from somebody saying there was no mention of marijuana as an Alaskan industry. Somewhat controversial, but it is a real industry, and people are active and engaged, and someday they may be part of the infrastructure and the Chamber of Commerce and things like that. I mean, that's what they want. And I see that they can fall under some of the first-year priorities. You know, you said they were sort of vague on purpose. But do you know if any advocates or any of the people looking for business licenses were part of your survey or your group? Or the timing may not have allowed it because they were busy working on legalization.
Right. Senator Gardner, through the chair. I agree. Marijuana absolutely positively is an emerging sector within the state and is, now starting to contribute the tax revenue as well. I don't know. They very well could have been some within the business surveys that went kind of just to a broad, whoever kind of wanted to pick that up that had interest enough to complete one, very well could have had some input in that. I don't think of the kind of industry groups, no, I don't think that they were one. However, and again, you're right, that they probably were quite focused on getting established kind of during this time frame, but moving forward that they might have a larger input as we go through the updates and the revision. I would imagine that they'll be much more established by the time we would do a new one, for sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So as I said, we've picked 10 objectives, not in any particular order on these slides, of the 28 in order to focus on those. Again, we went kind of back to the steering committee to get input on which ones would be useful. There's really kind of a combination that we've done within this grouping. There are ones that were identified by industry as being very important, such as workforce development. There are those that can be implemented by the department, such as crowdfunding and microfinance. And then there were those that had really strong stakeholder engagement, such as energy. And so those are some of the things that we've kind of factored into this choosing on this list. A major concern that we have heard over and over from industry representation on the strategy committee and from business owners is that issue of workforce development. And workforce development and economic development are strongly tied. And so it has its own objective. It is also woven throughout this document in different kind of industry sectors objectives as well. And so that's one of the ones that has really come to the top. A lot of these also are industries that make up the backbone of our economy. As you can see, resource extraction, oil and gas, seafood, tourism, those are all kind of major parts of our economy. But we do believe that there are opportunities for both growth and innovation within our existing sectors. So some of the kind of example action items, again, these are the priorities. Underneath the priorities, there are numerous action items typically. So increase sustainable growth in emerging visitor industry segments, such as outdoor recreation and adventure tourism. Promote Alaska's boat and shipbuilding and repair facilities for local vessel needs. We do have an aging fleet that is that maritime sector can serve that. The division is working on a emerging sector report series with the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development. And I know Nolan was here on Tuesday and presented to this committee. So we'll be releasing, I believe, the first one of those, the boat building one, in February. We're also looking to market Alaska's vast resources to potential investors seeking new projects. We will have an attendance at the Cambridge House, which is one of mining's investment trade shows, where we have the opportunity to really talk about our mining opportunities within the state of Alaska to those outside investors. And then easing barriers to entry in commercial fishing through increased utilization of both public and private sector financing options. My division also houses the commercial fishing revolving loan fund as well. And so that's an important one within the division. So here's the final slide with the rest of the priorities on it. There are also some things that we're already doing that we felt like we had some resources that we could devote to these priorities. Again, I really want to get some momentum under this project and get it moving forward. Import substitution, microfinance, crowdfunding, energy. We have a really excited group that's working on energy. And so to expand public awareness of allowable uses of crowdfunding under recent legislation, which was Senator Costello's innovative legislation. So we're looking at the Division of Banking and Securities as the regulator on that, but DED has picked up the promotional piece so that we can get that word out there. We are utilizing social media, news media, as well as engaging in speaking engagements as we can get them set up, in order to increase the use of that program. Identifying use mechanisms and leveraging non-state funds for energy projects around the state, and also looking at encouraging new federal infrastructure investment for rural broadband opportunities. So we know that that's important. It's becoming more and more important if you're not connected you're really not in that economy, right? You have to have that connection. And so those are some of the things. We're also, we have the Made in Alaska program, which is highly successful, and we're forming a stronger ties with our other divisions, Division of Agriculture and the Alaska Grown, as well as Silver Hand, which is the State Council on the Arts. We're looking to find ways that we can promote those programs together to kind of leverage the resources that we all have. And then, so we're now, we have the document, it's out there, and now we need to move into implementation. So this was a lot of work, and I had some great staff on it, but really the work starts now as we start trying to move the needle on these projects. And so, again, we're looking, we've been kind of out there talking about it, trying to get people interested. We're now forming, we're going to be forming these work groups. We're going to be pulling them in virtually through a meeting space that will persist so that they can kind of come in, have our meeting, they can upload stuff, documents, working notes and things when they leave, and then they come back again. All of that is still retained so that they can continue their work seamlessly. We're, again, forming on these things and starting this implementation. Within the department, we have a bi-week or twice a monthly meeting where we're kind of continuing to talk about this and how it is we're going to move these projects forward. So, and with that, I'm probably out of time, which is good. So this is the final report. It can be downloaded at northernopportunity.com. It is fairly lengthy. Again, the goals and action items section is the meat of it, but there's a lot of background information as well in there.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate you giving us that report, and you do have a question from Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Brittany, and Commissioner, for the presentation. And I think your priorities are great and they're right on, but how do we measure success? I mean, it's one thing to put this on paper, but then how do we know if we were successful in meeting our priorities?
Great question, Senator Meyer, through the chair. One of the things that the working group will establish is those metrics for those action items when they begin to form. Again, we've kind of just gotten this this meeting software in order, and so I would imagine within the next month we'll be starting to pull those groups together, and one of the topics of discussion will be metrics.
Okay.
Great question, Senator Myers.
Thank
you.
You.
Reading my mind. Commissioner Navarre?
Yeah. And, thank you, Madam Chair. If I could add, the one thing that is, I guess, unique or not unique that is needed for all of this is investment. And in order to encourage investment to Alaska, we need a couple of things that you have all been working on for a long period of time. We need a stable and, to the extent possible, predictable tax structure, whether that be for the oil and gas industry, for a broader spectrum of the economy, because there are costs associated with economic development. If we're trying to attract investment to Alaska and keep investment in Alaska, we have to recognize where the burden is going to be spread and recognize those costs, because another component of economic development and attracting investment in Alaska is quality of life issues, making sure we have a strong educational system, that make sure that we have a strong social structure. So all of those things sort of fit together for an effective economic development strategy, and I will look forward to coming back to the committee and presenting once we have a further economic message that we would like to share with this committee and the legislature.
Thank you. Senator Stevens, followed by Senator Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yesterday we heard, or whenever it was, recently we heard from some economists about the issues in Alaska, and I keep thinking of, you know, during the gold rush, Seattle was called the only city in America that owned a territory. And that was really true in terms of the salmon industry. And what we heard from the economists is that hasn't changed very much in terms of the fishing industry. The ownership of the canneries, the processors are all outside. The fishing fleet is limited entry is owned a lot by outsiders, not by Alaskans. So we have some serious problems to face there in the fishing industry. We have to do more than just primary processing here in Alaska. Senator Machiki mentioned value added. We see product going to China to be processed after primary processing here. So it's a very big issue. I don't know how we get our hands around it, but we have got to find a way to have to allow Alaskans and Alaska to benefit more from that particular resource, the fishing industry.
That's not a question. Would you like to respond to the question?
Not a question, really.
Yeah, thank okay. you. Senator Stevens, through the chair, I think you're absolutely right, and that, again, requires capital investment in Alaska. It also means that Alaska, as a state, has to have investment capital that we can use to support those types of initiatives, and it boils back to an economic foundation that will allow for that type of comprehensive approach.
Senator Stevens, through the chair. Yes, I mean, I think being over the Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund, this is an important topic to us. In order to utilize those loan funds, you do have to be a resident of Alaska. And so we feel that one of our important missions or things that we can do is help maintain that resident fleet. And I think that I want to say it's about 74% of the permits are held by Alaska residents, but I would need to double check on that.
And since you did bring up that one of the goals was to expand information about the equity crowd investing bill that we passed, that's a program where Alaskan businesses can raise up to $1 million through $10,000 contributions from individual Alaskans. And what we're seeing is that people are starting businesses, and then perhaps a construction worker will come and do some work, and that is their equity investment, and they are equity owners in the company. And yesterday we heard just how impactful the growth of small business is in an economy. It is how you grow an economy, is through growing and expanding what you already have and the assets that we already have here in Alaska and the intellectual property, the innovation of Alaskans ourselves is really key, I think, to growing our economy. Senator Gardner?
Thank you. So, Mr. Commissioner, you stated that investment requires a stable and predictable tax structure and an educational strategy. Social structure, that's sort of a new one for to me to think about, but okay, and also state investment. Is that any of that possible without the umbrella of a durable and stable fiscal plan?
Senator Gardner, when I talk about an economic foundation, I'm talking about a fiscal plan for Alaska that meets the needs in order to take advantage of opportunities now and well into the future. I think that we need to see if we can't come up with I'd like to see us dial down on some of the political rhetoric that we sometimes hear, and we're going into an election year, so we may not be as successful at that as we might otherwise like to be, but I dial back on some of that and see if we can focus on sort of a common plan or a vision for where we want Alaska to be in 5 years from now and 10 years from now. And long-term planning oftentimes runs into short-term election cycles, which compromises the ability to be effective at that. And that's one of the reasons that I took this role when the governor offered it, is to try to help with some of that in order to make sure that we don't lose sight of the long term when we focus our attention on the short term.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner, and I'm aware of that about your accepting this job, and I wanted to make sure that we put it on the record. Thank you.
Senator Machiki.
I think there are a couple of primary factors, right, on the fact that essentially everything has left Alaska law or raw for the last 75 years, right? I mean, we're 115 from our neck of the woods, whatever commercial fishing was essentially controlled by Seattle, but our logs, our timber is the same, our ore is the same, our fish is the same, and that's been the same when we've been in relative stability, and it's been the same when we've been in tougher times like it is today. So I agree that that's a portion of the problem, but I do think we need to be tougher on requirements for in-state value adding to our raw goods. And some of that may be solved through a financial plan, but I think other incentives, carrots and sticks, are necessary in order for us to move beyond that mentality that we've seen since long prior to statehood. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that in part, yes. And I think that when you look at those opportunities, if we are successful in Alaska with encouraging investment and growing our economy, there are associated costs with that, which that burden will fall somewhere. And if you can identify it up front by having a comprehensive plan in place, I think that leads to more predictability for people who are going to invest in Alaska, and therefore doesn't act as a disincentive to the very investment that you're talking about to meet the challenges that we have out there and opportunities.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming before us. I appreciate that, and we look forward to working with you on this as it moves forward. I'm sure the committee members would be interested in knowing when those meetings are for the working group and other opportunities, so thank you. Before I take a brief at ease, I want to mention next we will have a panel with Curtis Thayer of the Alaska Chamber, Kara Moriarty with Alaska Oil and Gas Association, Jillian Simpson and Julie Jessen of the Alaska Travel Industry Association, and then John Springsteen with the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. So as we take this brief at ease, we'll ask those individuals to come forward, and then we will have our panel discussion. Okay, we'll take a brief at ease. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, the Senate's Committee on the Economy. Again, I'm Senator Mia Costello. We have Senator Gardner, Senator Meyer, Senator Machicki, and Senator Stevens. And today's question we're looking at is, how can we boost Alaska's economy? We heard from the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, and now we're following up with a panel, including Curtis Thayer with the Alaska Chamber. Welcome. Jillian Simpson with the Alaska Travel Industry Association, welcome. And John Springsteen with the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. And we will be joined shortly by Kara Moriarty with the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, so she'll be rounding out the panel in a moment. And so thank you for coming. We were hoping today to have a conversation with you, perhaps a highlight about your industry or your area of expertise, with a slight focus on the question we're asking, which is how we can boost the economy. And also feel free to respond to any of the comments that you heard either Tuesday with our panel of essentially economists, or today, if you'd like to respond to something you heard in the report update from the department, feel free. And then we'll field questions from committee members. The committee does end at 3:30, so just want to make sure that everyone's aware of that. And again, thank you for coming. I really appreciate it. And we'll go ahead and start out with Curtis Thayer from the Alaska Chamber.
Thank you very much. And for the record, my name is Curtis Thayer, and I serve as the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Alaska Chamber. The Alaska Chamber was founded in 1953. We're celebrating our 65th anniversary this year. We are a nonprofit trade association working to promote private businesses and a positive business environment in Alaska. We are the voice of not only small but large chambers, and we represent well over 700 members and 100,000 working Alaskans. The chamber is the only statewide membership organization that represents all the business sectors from Ketchikan to Barrow, and we have one common goal, and that is to make Alaska a viable and competitive place to do business. And in a matter of 10 days, we have close to 100 members coming down for our fly-in and all visiting you in your offices. So you'll be hearing a lot more, I think, from us. As far as the question about where we are and a little bit on the economy, I think, first of all, we need to kind of touch on where we're at today. I think we all know that we have high unemployment. We saw it first in our oil and gas sectors leaving, and now we're seeing in our professional services, being attorneys, engineers, and now we've recently seen retail, Sam's Club, Sears, exiting the economy. We realize our population is in decline. We also have now seen real estate Class A space double in vacancy from 7.9 to over 15% in the Anchorage market. You know, we all agree we're in a recession. Now, the question is, have we hit bottom? I can't answer that today, but I surely know I don't want to languish at the bottom if that's where we're at, and we want to kind of go back up. And with that, there's a lot of positive things that are happening in the economy. First of all, we have increased oil production on the North Slope with just our existing work that we've done. Prices have stabilized. They've stabilized in the upper market. Kara can probably speak a little bit more to that. We have record-sized discoveries on the North Slope. We just read about one this morning. Is it 500 million barrels? Or is it a billion barrels? Those weren't conversations we were having 4 or 5 years ago that we now can have today. We're seeing movement on an LNG line. Matter of fact, just yesterday our members were briefed by Keith Meyer on what it looked like and what and where they see the gas line going and some of their dates or milestones they hope to hit. Not to get partisan, but I don't think many people expected 14 months ago to be saying President Trump, and let alone 14 months later to say offshore is open in Alaska, ANWR is open in Alaska, NPRA is now open. Those are things we've been chasing since statehood. And it all happened literally in the last 12 months, and hands off to our congressional delegation for their efforts in all those areas. So clearly we have new opportunity in resource development that we did not see 18 months ago. Wasn't even on the horizon that this all could happen. Mining has the potential that we could double in size if current projects were allowed to advance. Of course, there is a process, permitting process they go through, but mining is on the uptick, and there's huge opportunities there. Military investment, F-35s to Fairbanks is huge. We're looking at J-Bear and expansion. That's a key thing with Senator Sullivan, and he believes he has the commitments to hopefully see that. Tourism, again, experts are here. Million visitors. I remember speaking to many of you in your offices. You know, it wasn't, I think, 6-7 years ago we were talking about the decline, and we were at 700,000 ships, and how do we get to a million? We're there now. So really, there's a lot of positive momentum happening. But what we need, and I will echo the commissioner, we need fiscal and regulatory policies that attract investments. And that's where the state can help, and that's also sometimes where the state just has to stay out of the way. We have companies that have billions of dollars to invest with the recent tax bill that was passed in Washington, D.C. Let's make Alaska a place they want to invest those millions of dollars in our economy. And so with that, I'll leave that, but that's just kind of a touch on that. We have a lot of positives. We just need to develop a plan, roll up our sleeves, and work together on a common goal. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Curtis. And next, Jillian, if you'd like to give us an update on the tourism industry.
Great. Thank you, Senator Costello. My name is Jillian Simpson, and I'm the Vice President of the Alaska Travel Industry Association, and we are the industry trade association made up of 700 members representing tourism businesses in Alaska, both small and large, but the vast majority have less than 20 employees. Who are members of ATIA. And in addition to that role, we are also the contract manager for Alaska's Tourism Marketing Program. So we work very closely with the Alaska Tourism Marketing Board, as well as with Brittany at the Department of Economic Development. And it's kind of exciting for us to be the bright spot in the economy and to have some attention. As Curtis said, we are have been breaking records. We have the most visitors that we've ever had year over year. In fact, from 2011 to 2016, we had a 19% increase in the volume of visitors coming to our state. And it really right now is being led by the cruise industry. This past year, there was an increase of 3% in capacity, and for 2018, there'll be another 7% increase in capacity of cruises to Alaska. And that's driven by larger ships that are able to come here because of port infrastructure that's been implemented, as well as some new lines that are coming. And then new lines have also announced for 2019. And the cruise industry makes up just over half of all of Alaska's year-round visitors. So we used to say they come in May through September, but there's some that are operating as early as March this year. Alaska Dream Cruises is doing one out of Sitka for the herring run. So the visitor season is expanding, which is really great. But the one place that we're seeing kind of starting to be a little bit soft is in the independent market. And those are those visitors that are arriving by air, by highway, and by ferry. And they had been really a growing segment from 2011 up until 2016 when we had the most recent Alaska Visitor Statistics Program. And then in 2017, we saw that growth stop, and they've become pretty stagnant. And coincidentally, or not coincidentally, that's the same time that Alaska's tourism marketing budget was dramatically decreased. In 2 years, we had a 90% reduction. And so in fiscal year FY17, we had a $1.5 million funding from the state. This year, it's been increased to $3 million, so we're able to increase our activities a little bit. But it puts us as the 48th funded state in the United States as far as destination marketing, which may not seem like it's a big deal to compare us to other states, but really at the end of the day, there's a certain amount of money that is being invested in the domestic marketplace to attract the traveling public, and our job is harder than other states in the lower 48 because we're convincing people to come up here for longer and to spend more money and more time. And so we've lost market share. Tourism Economics, which is a subsidiary of Oxford Economics, and they work closely with the U.S. Travel Association, did a report for us recently that showed that our decrease in funding and putting ourselves out in marketing, really, has resulted in a decrease in visitor spending because we're not capturing as many visitors as we could. So even though we're doing great as far as the visitor volume, we're not getting as many people as we could. So we could have increased another $57 million in direct spending into the economy last year had our marketing levels remained what they had been historically, where we were sort of in the middle of the pack when you compared us to other state destination marketing organizations. And that also would have resulted in an additional 600 jobs. And we, again, recognize that the way to reach visitors and the way to, I don't want to use the word harvest, but to utilize that natural resource that we have in tourism is through destination marketing, and it requires an investment. And the industry knows that we need sustainable funding, and industry leaders are actually speaking right now. Our board is meeting right now to talk about the piece of legislation that this committee introduced last session. So thank you very much, and thank you for your leadership, Senator Costello, in the Travel Alaska Act, which would create a framework for a tourism improvement district.
Thank you, Jillian. Tuesday, we had a panel of individuals, including Milani Shivens from Southeast Conference and Robert Venables. And in her presentation, I don't have my notes in front of me, but she did mention that she was a little disappointed that the visitors that come to Southeast are spending, and I think the number was around $400-something per traveler, and she was surprised at that, hoping that we could somehow increase the amount of investment what that number would be so that we can grab more of that market. And there were some ideas that were talked about. Do you have information about how much an average traveler spends in Alaska per their visit?
We do, actually. The Alaska Visitor Statistics Program details that. And so in 2016, the average amount that was spent was $1,051 per person, which did not include their transportation to Alaska. So it's just money spent in Alaska. And actually, I'll need to go back and double check, because I know highway and ferry visitors are actually spending substantially more than that average. So I'm interested to see. I'll go back and confirm that number. But the highway ferry visitors, as well as people that are flying in particular international visitors, are spending a lot more than that average. That average is brought down is lower when you look at somebody who's taking a round-trip cruise, for example, because since they're on the cruise, that's considered how they got to Alaska, so we don't include the money that they're spending on the cruise, so they're not paying for lodging in Alaska. But it should be higher than $400 per person for a ferry visitor.
Thank you very much, Jillian. And we have a question from Senator Gardner, followed by Senator Michiki.
Thank you. I'm curious about if you have any data or any opinions about what the impact or what part of this loss of independent traveler has to do with cuts to the ferry system and some of the other problems they've had. There have been a lot of cancellations and rescheduling, and that sort of creates confusion and also a lack of confidence.
Yes, Senator Gardner, through the chair, that is a concern of ours, definitely, and it's something that we've definitely identified. That's been the biggest drop in. They were down by over 8% in visitation, whereas the other independent travelers, it was 1 percentage point or it was flat. So the ferry was definitely the most significant drop. And what we hear from our tour operators and our businesses that are trying to use the ferry is that it's extremely challenging because of all of the issues that you've identified. And we have a board member who is on the MTAB and another one who's on the steering committee, because it is such an important part of our industry to be able to have a stable, functioning ferry. And it's so cool. I mean, it's such a cool thing to be able to promote.
Thank you.
Senator Michiki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jillian, thanks for being here, and I do appreciate the success of your industry. It's been a bright spot last couple of years particularly. But what are the numbers, and how do they split out on cruise proportion versus independent travelers?
Sure. So in the summertime, 55% of our visitors are cruise travelers, which means they've traveled on a cruise at some point in their vacation. 45% we call air visitors, which means they flew in or flew out one way. And then 4% have been on the, either drove up the Alcan or took the Alaska Marine Highway.
Total numbers.
55% cruise, 45% air, and I guess it's 5% highway, ferry. That would make it 100.
Proportion, how many visitors were there last year?
Last year we were looking at approximately 2 million visitors. Yes.
A million, so that's about a million cruise visitors.
Yes, yes.
Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Jillian. Obviously, you're a popular panelist today, being peppered with questions. I'm aware that most of the independent travelers are return cruise visitors. So can you talk about what percentage of those 55% in a year then return the following year as an independent traveler?
Sure. Actually, excuse me. Thank you, Senator Costello. Through AVSP, we were actually able to really dive in a little bit deeper than we normally do and get some more specialized reports. And so our repeat visitation has actually increased since the last time the study was done in 2011. So 40% of all of Alaska's visitors have been to Alaska before. And then we wanted to know how many had taken a cruise before that inspired them to come back. And that number is 16%.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Gardner, followed by Senator Stevens.
Thank you. So data is really interesting and valuable, but it's important to kind of understand exactly what you're hearing. So I just want to make sure, when you say that if somebody comes up on the ferry, for example, and visits Alaska and travels around and flies home, they appear in your numbers as air travelers.
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, those people would actually appear as the highway ferry. So when we would make those definitions, if you took a cruise, you're a cruise visitor. If you were on a cruise at any point, you're a cruise visitor. If you were on an airplane one way, you would be an air visitor. And if you were ever on the ferry or drove the highway, you would be a ferry highway visitor. So we would if you were ever on the ferry as your mode of transportation into or out of the state, we would consider you a highway ferry traveler.
I'm a little bit confused because if somebody flies only one way, what's their other way?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, so the vast majority of them are their air. Yeah, they would fall in the air category. We just wanted to capture people who had taken a cruise to correctly identify them as a cruise visitor.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Stevens?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So is there a correlation, I think we've heard of it in the past, between unrest in the world and travelers coming to Alaska? And the further question would be, do you have a breakdown of U.S. citizens coming to Alaska versus other nationalities?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Stevens. Yes, we do have that breakdown. 84% of Alaska's visitors are from the lower 48. Maybe there's one or two from Hawaii, but they're domestic visitors. 7% are from Canada, and then 9% are from overseas, with those major markets being Central Europe, mostly German-speaking Europe, especially since we have those nonstop flights with Condor out of Frankfurt. The United Kingdom is another popular origin market for us, Australia, Japan and Korea somewhat, but where we're seeing a lot of growth actually on the international side is from China.
And so do we need to encourage unrest in the world in order to get more people to
I don't want to say we want to encourage unrest, but there's definitely, I mean, for sure, a trend about that. And you can see it most clearly with the cruise industry since they have assets that can be moved around the world, and they oftentimes will do that. But Alaska, we have the cachet of being exotic, and we appeal to people who would potentially want to go to an international destination, but we are safe. We have the same currency. We speak English. So that does, it does benefit us at times, certainly.
Thank you.
Just to dovetail on your comment, my family took the ferry from Skagway to Prince Rupert this last summer, and my children are learning German, and they had a lot of opportunity to speak with travelers from Germany who were on the ferry, and so that was really, really a wonderful experience. So, next, if there are no further questions for Jillian, I'd like to introduce John Springsteen with Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. If you could give your comments and perhaps respond to the previous presentation from the department, and then we'll have questions with you before we then go to Kara Moriarty with the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. Welcome, Kara.
Thank you. Apologize for my delay. Thanks.
Okay, certainly. Thank you, Chair. For the record, my name is John Springsteen. I'm Chief Executive Officer and Executive Director of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. ADA invests in Alaskans. In fiscal year 2017, ADA Investment supported 1,385 permanent jobs, 575 construction jobs. We increased our net position by $5.8 million to $1.317 billion. We declared a $12.8 million dividend to the state, bringing that total to the state of $392.8 million. And we funded $108 million in loan participations with partner banks for businesses and industry throughout the state. ADA is a tool in the state's economic development toolkit. ADA provides financial support for the stabilization, growth, and diversification of Alaska's economy through lending and investment. That said, ADA has capacity constraints, and ADA has is limited in its tools to stimulate the economy. The majority of state tools for spurring economic development are outside ADA's scope, including credits and grants, tax relief, royalty relief, administrative and legislative stimulus, and master planning for resource development. That said, we think it's critical and important that each incentive carries a performance requirement, and that's the way ADA approaches business in its day-to-day business, starting with market rates, and then for the benefits provided to Alaskans, whether it's through jobs or revenue, then we can provide additional incentive. But again, having that performance requirement as a part of an incentive offered. Now, in terms of other things that ADA does not control, we don't control commodity prices, cost of labor, cost of material supplies, cost of energy, qualified available workforce, or the decision-making of other investors. Also, state and federal government programs that support Alaska's general economic development are beyond ADA's control, such as defense, Arctic safety and response, healthcare, education, community infrastructure like public water, wastewater, and energy, public roads, and public facilities. Now, that said, ADA funds are used to support business and industry by lending and investing throughout the state of Alaska for growth in Alaska tourism, industrial access to natural resources, expansion of industrial infrastructure, and keeping Alaska's existing and future businesses resilient through access to affordable long-term capital. In terms of the silver linings, and this is my opinion only clearly, tourism continues to do well, and we have a beautiful, bountiful state. ANCSA regional corporations and village corporations contribute and on a continuing basis to Alaska's economy. Oil prices appear to be improving. Mine commodity prices also appear to be improving. Alaska remains a key component for national defense. The population of Alaska in 2017 is more fiscally stable compared to the population of 30 years ago. Alaska has substantial savings that earn returns, and we are living in a more favorable federal environment for responsible resource investment and development. Now, over the past several months, ADA has funded an $8.2 million loan participation to Todamin and Valdez for rebuilding of the hotel, and that supports tourism and industry. We worked with the Yukon Kuskokwim Health Corporation on a $165 million conduit revenue bond issue to provide a new clinic and upgrade the hospital in Bethel, Alaska. We funded a $5.4 million loan participation for a business center in Anchorage that supports existing business, $1.3 million loan participation of a multi-use building in Wasilla. This supports new business in Wasilla, and a $1.2 million loan participation for Gear Tank in Fairbanks that supports industry in Fairbanks. Also, I think worth a mention, in recent history, ADA funded a $20 million loan participation to Huna Totem Corporation for Icy Straits Point in support of tourism. So we are active throughout the state, and we are active in the major sectors of Alaska's economy.
Thank you very much. Can you, you know, we heard on Tuesday how important it is to grow and expand what we already have. Can you talk a little bit more about the $5.4 million investment in a company that supports other businesses?
Certainly. So in this case, the $5.4 million loan participation for a business center in Anchorage, and that's a loan that supports an existing general business. It's a commercial loan, and the owner of the building has you know, various lessees. But by being able to access ADA's relatively low-rate, long-term fixed capital, it allows our Alaska owners and businesses to be more resilient.
Thank you. And my other question is about governance at ADA. I mean, can you talk about your governance philosophy that you use? That, has it changed? And, you know, what's your expectation of your, you know, your future impact on Alaska's economy?
Right, certainly. And, well, from a high level, in terms of overall governments, we have 735,000 shareholders, the population of the state of Alaska. We have what I view as our shareholder representatives, which is you, the legislature, as well as our governor. And I speak to the governor as our institutional shareholder since he appoints the board. And our board is composed of the commissioner of the Department of Revenue, commissioner of the Department of Commerce, or their delegates, as well as five successful Alaskan business people. I think it's also worth noting that the ADA board is shared with the Alaska Energy Authority board, so it's the same board, which provides some benefit in my mind for fiscal discipline. And then below that, there's us, the staff. And then within our staff, I think of ADA as three funds and two special assignments. And our three funds are our core fund we do most of our business in on a day-to-day basis, which is the revolving fund. And then we have our Sustainable Energy Transmission and Supply Fund, which is, you know, has a small capitalization of just a few to several million dollars at this point. And then we have the Arctic Infrastructure Fund, which is a program placeholder that has no funding. And then in terms of special assignments, we've got the Interior Energy Project, of which we're a steward, to help to provide access to lower cost natural gas for interior Alaskans, and then the Ambler Mining District Industrial Access Project in order to follow up on the promise made by the federal government in Section 2014 of ANILCA that Alaska should have access from the Dalton Highway to the Ambler Mining District. So those are the two special projects under our purview. And then we have continued to refine our processes and our principles when we go about our day-to-day business. And for our our normal processes, we've inserted our internal ADA investment committee staff at more steps in our review of a project developer and project partners. And then we have also provided a more discrete six-factor model that we use in our day-to-day business. And when we're working along with a project developer, project partner, we're very conscientious about who our partner is. Do they have the knowledge and the experience to do what they say that they're going to do? Do they have capital to co-fund investments in construction and operation of a facility or for a project? And, over and above that, do they have credible revenue sources and contracts that are lined up to do any offtake of goods produced or services produced? A couple other factors in there, which we also look at, are do you have, your plans and designs are complete? Do you have the permits and permissions necessary for the project, as well as have you lined up contracts for key supplies? If you have a long lead time item that will take 36 months for you to, have engaged and shipped up to use in your facility, then we need to make sure that that is embedded in their plan and that we are aware of it, and we match our lending and investment against that.
Thank you. Have you looked at the department's Northern Opportunities plan?
Yes, not only have I looked at the Northern Opportunity plan, I participated as part of the group of 30 that Ms. Haywood mentioned.
And does ADA plan on using that somehow? I mean, do you go out and actually cultivate clients or customers, or do they come to you?
Yes, well, it's a little bit of back and forth. So we make more and more efforts to reach out and work with the artists throughout the state and with the business and industry out the state to understand what programs exist at the authority. We want to be a pathway to capital, right? So if there's a good project in Alaska and we can provide a pathway to capital for it, even if it's not out of our own bank account, it's getting access to that for the good project. Thank you for inviting me to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. This is, I think, a great way to get our message out and to let people know what we're capable of and what our principles and practices are. And in addition to that, we'll continue to work with Division of Economic Development and Department of Commerce as they are working throughout the state for these different projects. And we try to be opportunistic. When we have visits out through different communities in the state of Alaska, participating in economic councils, we're maximizing that time. So if we're on the ground in Kotzebue or in Barrow or in Dillingham or in Juneau or in Ketchikan, that we're meeting with folks and talking about how things are, what their plans are, and what role we can play.
Thank you very much, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, one of the programs that we started and now no longer continuing to fund is the oil tax credit program, which was very successful in the sense that it attracted smaller oil companies and gas companies in the Cook Inlet as well as on the North Slope. And it's my understanding ADA was part of that process as well, maybe participating in a jackup rig and then also participating in some of the smaller oil companies' investments up on the North Slope. Brooks Range comes to mind. Yes. You didn't mention either one of those two projects. Is there a reason?
Certainly, Senator, through the chair. I was speaking to the projects that were in our very recent history, and if we look back a little bit further to other investments and projects that we've involved in the Endeavor rig being brought to Alaska and working in Alaska and then moving out of Alaska, as well as working to fund Roden Pad. And, that is industrial infrastructure, and that's a very good project for ADA, and we need to continue to do those types of things, similar to the Long Mountain Transportation System that supports the Red Dog Mine in Northwest Alaska, road port, fuel facility, staging areas, warehouse, conveyor belt. And then another one that was in recent history was with Bluecrest, where we loaned for their drilling rig and camp, which is an extended reach drilling rig working in Cook Inlet. So, yeah, certainly supportive of oil and gas industry. But the opposite side of that is, again, making sure that our incentives that we can provide are tied to that performance requirement. And in this case, there's some clear performance in terms of production of oil and the associated royalties that come along with that, as well as jobs for Alaskans.
Okay, good. Madam Chair, obviously you've been very successful. I mean, we still get a dividend from you, so that's a good sign. But do you have metrics as well as which of all the, I don't know, in any given year, if you invested in 20 projects, 15 were successful, 5 were not? Any metrics like that?
Well, we take the view that we make all of our projects successful.
Well, a couple that come to mind in past history that maybe you
heard. Well, we take efforts to not repeat a fish church.
Okay.
And that's part of the reason that we have some of the more disciplined practices that we've instituted, and thorough vetting and evaluation of our project partners, which are not necessarily just the developers, but also if the source of capital is beyond the developers, what those financing partners look like.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. On Tuesday, we had Dr. Gutabi from the Institute of Social and Economic Research, and he asked the question or posed the challenge that we need to localize our supply chain, and all of the panelists responded to that. I mean, how can ADA help localize the supply chain in Alaska?
Let's see. I'm familiar with the topic from the idea of import substitution. And I'm not sure what Mr. Gutabi was referring to in terms of supply chain localization. So if I frame it as import substitution, it's what are the things that we can do here in Alaska for ourselves to make ourselves more self-sufficient and resilient, and reduce the amount of imports that we take. And I think there are a lot of interesting models for that. I appreciate the efforts made by some of these hydroponics in a box growers. To have fresher, more locally available, supplies of greens and other fruits and vegetables and, things of that nature. But anytime we have food security, that's an important issue. We actually participated in a loan to the Blood Bank of Alaska for their new facility. And that was a good loan from our standpoint because we have a facility now that takes in and tests, and you have a local fresher supply of blood for Alaskans, and then you're just exporting the net amount to the Pacific Northwest. So another good effort for the state to continue to localize and to substitute imports. And other areas where we can take advantage of that, certainly open to discussing where we have a role.
Thank you. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Springsteen, it's really, really impressive what ADA's accomplished. But I'm not clear about the beginning. I know we funded, the state funded ADA, puts a dollar amount into it. Can you tell me how much that was and what those dividends? I know the good work you've done, but also you've given dividends to the state. Can you tell us that? You said a cumulative amount, but I didn't write that down. So can you compare our original investment with what we've received back?
Yeah, certainly. And then the figures from history are two tranches. The first tranche was for the loan participation program. And in that program, we work along with Alaska banks, and then we will fund up to 90% of a loan. And that, I believe, was around $140 million. And then the second tranche was actually for the road and port that services the Red Dog Mine. And that was, again, another $140 million-ish dollars. The total package, $240 million for a total of $380. I think I've got that right on the map. So roughly $300 million in its initial capitalization. And then we've taken and grown that over the years into what I... Our current net position of $1.317 billion, plus having dividended out $392.8 $8 million. So it's, you know, roughly $1.7 billion from that initial $380 million investment. And I think that works out to about a little over a 5% return per year if you're looking at it on that basis.
So if I have that right, we've been returned more than we invested?
Yeah, yes, sir. But being a finance person, I think about time value of money as well. So
that's great news. Thank you.
Thank you. Great. Well, Kara Moriarty has joined us with the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. And, Kara, if you could just give us a brief snapshot of where the industry is today and any comments that you have from the discussion that you've heard would be wonderful.
Thank you. First of all, thank you for the invitation to the chairwoman. For the record, my name is Kara Moriarty. I'm the president and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. We are a private trade association that represents the majority of companies who are producing, exploring, refining, and transporting oil and gas in the state. So we have members from both Cook Inlet and the North Slope. I think all of you were at our lunch today earlier, but for the record, I'll repeat some of the messages that you heard. We're at a time of great optimism for the oil and gas industry. For the first time in almost two decades, we have seen 2 years in a row of increased production, and we're on track to have a third. That's awesome. We have 540,000 barrels a day going down a 2 million barrel a day pipeline. So clearly, even though we've had small increases, we have the capacity for a lot more. And the other great news is in the past several years, we've had recent discoveries on state land onshore that are extremely exciting and opportunistic. We also have, my friend Mr. Springsteen mentioned the alignment that we have with the federal government right now. We have a federal government who believes that our country should be energy dominant, and the only way to do that, to be successful, is with Alaska. And so in the past year, we've had some historic changes take place with the new management plan for the National Petroleum Reserve. In addition to that, we have a new estimate, largely in part to those discoveries on state land that I mentioned, that we think we have maybe up to almost 9 billion barrels of recoverable oil in MPRA, much different than the previous estimate of just under 1 billion. We had the historic vote about a month ago for allowing for two lease sales in a 10-year period in the 1002 area of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And so we just have all this great optimism. We are still, from an economic perspective, economists will say the oil and gas industry is about one-third of the state's economy. You can attribute over 110,000 jobs in Alaska back to the oil and gas industry, and we're about a third of the wages in the state. And those are 2016 data, so that's pretty recent data to reflect upon. We are still the largest taxpayer to the state, and I believe this fiscal year we're on track to be 65% to 75% of your unrestricted general fund, which I tell the Alaska public is really the checkbook that you have. The challenge that you all have is that 65% to 75% is no longer 65% of your budget, and so there's this shortfall that you're all dealing with. But from our perspective, we have great opportunity. We know we're not out of oil. We know that we can continue to be that economic driver for the next 40 to 50 years, and we stand ready to be that partner. In terms of the economic report that was developed, I was not able to participate in all of the meetings. I am one of the names listed. I sent out that business survey to all of my member companies and pinged them a couple different times to make sure they participated in those surveys. And we were not invited at the beginning of the process, but through most of the rest of the process, we were involved. And so as I look at the report that I downloaded after the invitation to reread before today, I mean, if you look at the objective on page 17 of the report, when it comes to our industry as well as other resource industries, we could not disagree with any of these action items. I mean, I think when you look at promoting a consistent business environment that includes a stable tax regime, increasing mapping, making high priority projects that are make them accessible, making sure that we have increased access, improved infrastructure, and being able to market our resources to potential investors. All those are very achievable in our view. They're measurable. If we look at this report 5 years from now, how did the state do in that objective? And we stand ready to continue to be a strong partner with the state.
Thank you, Kara. Are there questions? Senator Machicki?
Well, I think you know what questions I'm going to ask. So this meeting is about how we can boost Alaska's economy. And I have two questions for you. There are two efforts going on in the building right now. One is about increasing the cost of permitting through a bill that is called Save Our Salmon Initiative, starting with a bill perhaps ending up on the ballot. The second effort is another oil tax revision. So just with that discussion, how will those help us boost our economy, considering oil and gas production in the state of Alaska right now?
So, Senator Machicki, through the chair, in our perspective, even though we are at a higher oil price today than we were a couple years ago, and even higher than the forecast, we believe, based on analysis and analysts that others talk about forecasting prices, that you know our companies are looking at a lower for longer in their long-range forecast and how to be efficient, because what has really, in addition to the investments that were made in 2013, 2014, that has led to this increase in production. It has also been really focused on efficiency. Our industry has had significant job loss in the last 15 to 16 months. I just saw a Department of Labor presentation last week in your home community about that might starting to level off a little bit. However, we're not out of the woods yet, I guess is my long-winded answer to say anything that adds cost to our business makes it very challenging to grow our business. And when the industry grows, the state of Alaska grows. And so whether it's the permitting initiative, which is sort of a parallel track in my mind, you have a piece of legislation that would be very detrimental, and then an almost identical, they're not exactly the same, but they're very similar initiative that is likely to be on the ballot based on what the Supreme Court decides. So from our perspective, anything that makes it impossible to get permits or projects permitted or projects, existing infrastructure, a renewal process that's challenging, that will stifle our ability to continue to grow. Additionally, another tax bill, again, it's all about that adding cost. And so I think the proposal that was introduced on the other body a couple days ago, I think the estimates are anywhere from $250 to $280 million increase at a time when capital is becoming even more competitive. I don't see how either one of those proposals would add more oil into the pipeline.
Senator Machicki?
Ask one more question. Sure. I unfortunately have a meeting I can't miss immediately after my question, but my question is back to Mr. Springsteen on things that we've done in the past, and we've talked about sort of the value-adding problem we have in the state of Alaska of our raw goods, natural resources. So we tried a finishing facility for fish in Anchorage that didn't do so well. We had some problems with performance expectations for some of the Cook Inlet credit takers in that program. What kind of debriefing do you do so that we continue to employ ADA at its highest level of capacity to drive our economy forward, but making sure that we don't similarly make those mistakes. I never saw a debriefing on either of those projects, and I would really like to see that, just in supporting your mission going forward.
And then was there a specific cook inlet producer?
I'm
okay, I understand. No, I understand which one. Okay. And we'll follow back up with you on those. Let's see. In terms of highest and best use of ADA as it makes investments in projects for development, I think we, with our board, work to do a better job of acknowledging risks and making sure that we have the appropriate returns as well as what safeguards are necessary. And we've continued around that path of a more disciplined approach to make sure that, if we are taking, a risk, that we do get the requisite financial return as well as the benefits to the state in terms of, jobs and royalty revenue and other potential social benefits. But that's what I outlined in terms of what we go through when we're looking at our project partner and looking at project developers, but also looking at the other side that's helping to finance in addition to us, so our financing partner as well. Let's see, to the discussion of value-adding activities, to do more in Alaska, having discussions and playing an intermediary role between communities and industry players has actually worked fairly well, and we will continue down that path. One example that I have been allowed by the company to acknowledge is Graphite One, which is looking at graphite development just outside of Nome, Alaska. And working with the communities throughout the state of Alaska, identifying what areas would be good candidates for value add. But again, it's a decision by the developer and their financing partner as to where they want to locate. Some of the challenges are transport costs, energy costs, and construction costs. So traditional costs that have been challenging for the state of Alaska. But we do have some advantages in terms of the location of Alaska relative to market user. If you've got supplies that are making their way to Asia, then there may be a benefit to locating facility in Alaska that overcomes the challenges that we have within the state.
Well, thank you for that.
Thank you. Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is for Curtis there with the chamber. Curtis, we're asked all the time to try to diversify our economy up here in Alaska. I mean, Alaska is still dominant one industry, as was mentioned, 65% of our revenue is coming from one source, and that's obviously been higher, up to 90%. So how do we diversify? How do we attract other businesses, corporations, industry to Alaska so that we aren't just dependent on the oil and gas industry for our main source of revenue?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, it's kind of an interesting topic because just today, Amazon announced their 20 leaders for cities to possibly grow in. That is something that was an opportunity that we as an Alaska chose not to participate in. And so some are handed to us, like, Amazon, who says, we want to invest $5 billion, bring up 50,000 jobs that pay over $100,000 into your community. We chose not to participate in that. So those aren't, like I said, those aren't handed to us. We really have to chase them. And one of the things that we have to chase, and like I said, now there's a lot more money on the table for businesses that want to invest, and then it's also we want to be a good place to invest. And we do have trouble with our reputation. We did go out, and we had a lot of companies invest in the North Slope. They found oil, like we had asked them to do. We've not paid their credits. That is an issue when you go look to see, does the state fulfill its obligations? I'm very pleased to see the administration recognize that debt needs to be paid and looking at mechanisms of how to do that. That's important. But I think part of it is we just need to be very aggressive in competing with other states in looking at bringing in new issue or new opportunities into our economy, because we depend a lot on the federal government. We depend a lot on the oil industry, and like I said, right now, the prospects are red hot with the fact of everything opening federally for us and the administration that supports dominance. But we need to look at reinvesting in our fishing fleet. You know, I was in Petersburg on Chamber of Business, and it was the end of the season, and all the boats were going to Seattle. They were packing up, and they were heading out, and that harbor was empty fairly quickly. And so we need to look to see how we can reinvest those. And so really, it's one of those things we just need to figure out in work of investing and bringing new people here. That's like, I'm glad to see the Department of Commerce is going out to the mining shows. We have opportunities. We have to convince them Alaska's a place to do business. But first, we have to stop and work on our reputation that the state honors the commitments we make when we ask companies to come to Alaska.
Sure. Well, I appreciate that. You know, and I don't know much about the military and the supply chain that they rely on for their goods, but it seems to me that I'm familiar with the oil and gas industry, and they try to buy as much as they possibly can in the local Alaska economy. I'm not so sure about the military, if they're buying locally or if they buy in the lower 48 or how they buy it, but I'm just thinking that if our small businesses here can be part of the supply chain for oil and gas, tourism, fishing, military, you know, kind of support what we do have and grow our own, so to speak.
To the chair, Senator Meyer, I can't agree with you more. I don't know the dynamics of the military. I do know when the F-35s are coming to Fairbanks, we had some national corporations reach out to us and ask us what Alaska businesses do X, Y, and Z. So we reached out to those businesses. We got that information. We sent that to them, and we understand that they've hired some of those companies. And they're ones working on the F-35 Raptors and bringing, so it's a lot of construction pieces of it. So those companies, again, exist out there. They just know, they knew, let's call the state chamber and see what they can do. And so we really try to reach out and bring that partnership together. And then they later joined the chamber, which was a benefit to the chamber, obviously. So those opportunities are out there. We just need to figure out how to work with them, and the military is a good example. But I do know of the outreach that the businesses, the national companies involved in the military, how they've done some outreach up here.
Thank you, Curtis. And just to dovetail on that, I co-chair the Joint Armed Services Committee, and we had an annual report that was released just today. So copies will be delivered to all the members of the legislature, and it has information that's interesting there about some of the questions that you brought up. So that report is available for those who are interested. Are there any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. I really appreciate the panelists being here. I did want to mention Senator Begich has been here the entire time. I appreciate your being here and your interest in the committee. Thank you also to Senator Gardner, Senator Meyer, Senator Machicki, and Senator Stevens. On Tuesday, next Tuesday, we will be answering the question, how are Alaskans innovating? We will be hearing an update from Division Director Lori Winghire on the health insurance innovation waiver and an update on that, followed by Thursday's question, which is, how do we best train Alaskans for jobs? So with that, I want to encourage everyone to follow us on our committee Facebook page. And if you have any questions or information of the panelists, members, if you would like to run them through my office, my aide is Natasha McClanahan. Thank you for all your work. Then we'll distribute those to the members, and we'd like to have a continuing conversation with the panelists, so please feel free to reach out for, you know, if you have ideas or things that you would like to get to the members that you weren't able to bring today or that you think of afterwards. So with that, the committee is adjourned, and thank you.